To see examples of what we talk about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
You know who we are because you just heard the song. I'm Don.
I'm Rook.
And if you know something, it's hard not to see it anymore. That's all I got.
You know, it's very true, actually. My wife and I were just at one of the malls, and they had an exhibit talking about, like, optical illusions and things.
Yeah, yeah.
Showing how, like, you know, once you see the dog in this picture, you'll never be able to unsee it again.
And that is true.
And it's true. Yeah, absolutely.
I, at one point in my life, I was in a position that for 6 years that I absolutely hated. And basically, I still had a life and enjoyed it, but a lot of the things, I didn't have time, I couldn't hardly think straight. And when I left that position, all of a sudden, the whole world opened up. I was reading again. I was, you know, doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And what's strange is trails you start hitting. Like, somebody lent me a book by Eric Lustbader. He's been ghostwriting those Robert Ludlum books, the Bourne books,
okay,
Bourne Identity,
yeah,
and stuff. But his books were like that. They were always mystery, espionage, martial arts, you know, international conflicts. And in his books, he would always, you know, there was always this philosophy in between the guy banging all the women and killing everybody. But they started talking about the Buddha. And if somebody lent me a Gore Vidal book about creation, and it didn't seem like no matter what I read, it would start talking about Buddhism, and it started talking about reincarnation. And then a friend of mine had a book on reincarnation. And okay, I wasn't seeking this stuff, but I kept reading these things, and it all kind of tied in. And then a guy I trained with was a Mason, mm-hmm, which is something that kind of fascinated me. Off mic, Rook and I were talking about a guy I used to work with that knew all about, he knew everything, but he knew about Tesla, and he always carried on about the Masons, and it started turning to conspiracy theories. I thought it was just something he made up in his head. Then I found out the Masons were real. Anyway, when I trained with this guy as a Mason, you know, I was telling him all this stuff, and then he lent me a book. And the book, the author, it's a really good book called Born in Blood. But the author says he thinks that they came from the Knights Templar, which is an old order that went through the Crusades.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I can't stress how awesome the book is, but after reading that, everything I ever picked up was either about Buddhism, reincarnation, or the Knights Templar, which is someone ever... I had a book on Rudyard Kipling. You know, somebody lent me a book of all of his short stories and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Man Who Would Be King was in it. And it turns out Rudyard Kipling was a Mason. And when you read the book, you start realizing all this stuff is in there. Masonry, Buddhism, Freemasonry, Tesla. I don't know how it got on. But nevertheless, if you see something, it's always going to be there. So
I'm, you see about some comics.
Yeah. That went nowhere, but nevertheless.
It's all right.
All right, I'm trying not to shock everybody, but I bought a book that I never thought I'd buy. It's not that I don't like them. I'm always on the outside.
Punisher, really?
Yeah,
well,
see.
Well, you know, a couple episodes ago, you bought Fool Killer, so.
I like the artist Gordon Parlov. He, Al and I did some episodes where I talked about Starlight. He, Mark Millar, under his Miller World books, had Starlight, which is kind of a Flash Gordon kind of book. I found an issue in the dollar box, as I always do. Well, this is nice, so I bought the trade. Fantastic story. The artwork is second to none, and I've become a big Goran Parlov fan. Well, I like him on Facebook, and he started posting pictures of the Punisher, which... extremely popular character, but to me, Punisher was a bad guy in Spider-Man in the 70s, and that's how he'll always be to me. I just don't have the appeal of reading the other books. So I wasn't real happy to find out he was doing this. Anyway, I was at Wilson's, the bookstore I go to, and they had an issue. I think it was the 5th issue. And I picked it up, and I said, I'll try it out. Read it. It's terrific. It's telling about his time in Vietnam. Well, just to tell you, the reason I stopped really liking the Punisher was a Spider-Man character. But when Marvel in the 70s were doing those black and white magazines, the Punisher had his own black and white magazine, and my cousin had it. Great cover. The cover's white, has a picture of the Punisher in the middle painted, which was awesome. But he's shooting everybody around him with a gun in every hand, and, you know. But when I read it, the story was good. But basically, it just talks about how he was a Vietnam vet, and his wife and kids were gunned down in front of him. And these two cops are trying to find it. And they said, even the kids, that's sad. And, you know, it was a procedural. But I don't know, it just, you know, as a young guy, it really bothered me some. I just didn't really enjoy it so much, except when he was in Daredevil and Frank Miller did it, and he was pretty neat. Anyway, this is telling about, it starts out with these guys in a bar, older men, they were from this platoon, they were Vietnam vets. And he said, there's somebody off camera that basically he's written a book, and he's writing another book about Frank Castle. I think it's Frank Castle, right?
Yeah, that's Punisher.
Yeah. But this was his unit. And at first, when they mention it, and they realize who he was, one of them gets up to leave. And the guy, the unseen author just quietly explains his first book, what he did and what he's wanting to do and why he's wanting to talk to these men. Well, he convinces them. And then after that, they start telling a story. So he's talking about it, they're talking about it, and at some points, these men look at him like, how do you know this? Because this is quiet ops that nobody was aware of. And I ended up finding the first 3 issues in Texas. Actually, when we finish this show, I'm going to go to Yancey and see if I can find the 4th issue. It's the only one I'm missing. And Goran Palov is a good artist. But I'll tell you, there's something a lot of people don't think about is acting. You know, when you draw your characters, how you act them out.
Well, yeah. You can't just position anybody.
Exactly. Yeah. This one, these men, it's understated, but these old men are sitting, and each one's uniquely different. And it's interesting to see how he aged the characters. I mean, it's not like if I was drawing the story, I would draw the characters that are young, and then when you have old them, all I do is just have a few, you know, lines in their face and some gray hair, you know, maybe a beard or two. You know, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And a lot of people tend to do that. This one, you can see they're the same men, but if you look at pictures of me when I was 20... compared to now, you can tell I'm still the same guy, but much different, you know, besides less hair and more weight, but things change, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he shows this in there, but when these men, when they're talking and they're surprised, sometimes the surprise, the shock he draws is, sometimes it's subtle, but and just how he positions the people to get up to leave, and then how they stop when somebody says something. The story is by who?
Garth Ennis.
Yeah, Garth Ennis. The story is strong, and Garth Ennis certainly knows how the military worked. When I'm reading this, I wasn't in Vietnam, but when I read it, I feel like I am. And there's certain things in there. It's hard when you make rank and you're in charge of an area that you're coming into, and there's people already there that know the job, and you have to be in charge of them.
Yeah.
And it's very uncomfortable. And basically what you have to do, I had a chief that used to tell us, what you got to do is you walk in and says, I don't know this job, you got to teach me, and be real real jerky. Well, some people don't like to do that. You know, some people, you have to build trust. And this one, I think it's a recon unit. It's out there in the field. And they're talking about they lost their last lieutenant. And it says, who's this? It's the new guy. And I mean, they're not being belligerent, but he shows up and he's new. He's never had a command before.
That's Castle?
Castle. Castle's the lieutenant of this group.
Okay.
Thanks for asking that. The unseen rider, when they realize they want to talk, that's why the guy gets up. It's basically showing there was trust with their lieutenant and with the unit, and they didn't want to, you know, when they realized he was the, you know, he or she, I haven't finished the end, so I'm not sure who the unseen rider is. But when they realized they wrote the book about Frank Castle before, and I'm wanting to know if Gorham, if this is a book, the first series, this is Punisher the Platoon, I wonder if they wrote another series about this writer. But basically it shows Frank Castle show up, and when they're talking about they're doing a recon that night, and they said, but you just got in, it's too much, you can set this one out. And then Frank Castle says, no, I can't, that's something I can't do. And it shows him right off from the beginning he's involved. Mm-hmm. You know, and he makes sure, and when they're talking about what do you know, he says, I don't, that's why I'm counting on you guys to teach me what I need to know. So immediately he comes in with humility, but also with conviction, and he takes charge of the unit, but they build a trust almost immediately. Now, I don't like to give away stuff in the book, but at one point, the guys are complaining about the M16s were always jamming, they weren't working, and they wanted the old rifles they used to use. And Frank Castle, with his sergeant, flies into this other place where the depot is. And he works out a deal with those guy, with the guy at the depot. Basically, the guy is saying how it's a gold mine and they're making so much money hand over fist. And he plays by the rules, but he basically gets the rifles he needs. And it's interesting how he did it. And at one point, he told that supply sergeant, he says, he's talking about a shipment of opium that's coming in. And he goes, oh, Lieutenant, I don't really know exactly what you're talking about. And then Frank Castle just looks at him with his steely eyes and says, that doesn't come anywhere near this unit. Do you understand? And all of a sudden the guy's like, you know, even the sergeant with Frank Castle's kind of shocked that Castle will bend the rules here and there, but keep away from my unit.
Sorry, guys. Little doggy difficulties.
That's okay. But, again, it's a really good story, fantastic artwork. It's a 6-issue series, and the Max, is that's part of the Marvel Comics, or is this something different?
Max Comics is a grittier, dirty version of everything that's going on. It's kind of the it's like the rated R version of Marvel Comics is what it is.
Okay.
So,
well, this one right here, again, that black and white Marvel magazine, I just found as a kid. I'm not bagging on the creators, but to me it was just like wallowing in sewage. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a difference between telling the story at an adult level, but even though it's a Vietnam War and they show it, it reminds me of that movie Platoon that came out. But I don't find it gratuitous. I mean, if I was a kid, maybe I'd feel that way. But sometimes some of the books I read, they kind of gross me out for no reason. You know, this one doesn't. This one basically, it shows Frank Castle as a man of conviction. Mm-hmm. He's not a bad man. But
he kind of gives you an understanding of why he made the choices.
Exactly. And that's why when the writer, when those men were starting to not even talk to him, and then Ryder explained why, and they realized he is trying to get to the point of why Frank Castle became the Punisher. And I tell you, this is a great series. This is one I had no intention of buying. I was always kind of irritated that Goran Pawlov was drawing it. I wanted to do something else I'd like, but stepping out of your comfort zone, fantastic book that I never thought I would have bought. Your turn.
My turn. Oh, man. We actually just finished season two of Jessica Jones. Of course, Jessica Jones from The Defenders on Netflix.
Okay, that's what I want to ask you. I've heard countless time the writer, I can't think of his name, but he's on Word Balloon a lot.
Okay.
And I hear him talk about Jessica Jones. I hear other podcasts, some guys talk about Jessica Jones. I have no idea who Jessica Jones is.
All right, so in the Netflix universe, Jessica Jones is a superpowered private investigator.
Yeah.
Okay. She got her powers from an accident. Whole family dies in an accident. She survives. She gets powers. First season really doesn't go into it very much. It's really her against this character Kilgrave, which is played by one of the previous Doctor Who's. Okay. It's very, very well done. It's the you're not going to see people flying around or anything like that, or you know superpowered fights. You're going to see a little bit of strength. You know, she gets shot or grazed by a bullet and stuff. Jessica Jones is originally the character. Originally the character Alias.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
So she was the TV show Alias.
No, not the TV show Alias. The character Alias in the comics.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, Jessica Jones. Let me think. What was it? I think it was somewhere in Spider-Man. I think is when she first showed up. Alias is the TV show. She was Jewel. She was a superhero named Jewel. So, very underrated. Nobody really paid too much attention or anything like that. She shows up a couple times throughout the years. You know, nothing grand. But her character's been used to make this television series, which is really quite good. The new season picks up, and she is just as drunk and just as, because she's a horrible alcoholic. She's just as drunk and just as, you know, mean as ever. It picks up after the events of the first season where she snapped the neck of Kilgrave, which was, Kilgrave can control people's minds.
Okay.
So he was controlling all these minds. In order to stop him, she snaps his neck. Done. But it was all caught on film. Oh. So, you know, long story short, for that season, she is found not guilty of murder and whatnot, but people look at her as like this vigilante superhero that's going to just kill people that get in her way. You can see that all of this is affecting her right from go at the beginning of this season. And this season delves very deeply into her past, into how she got her powers, why she has her powers, where they came from, who gave them to her. Yeah. And it also deals a lot with her adopted sister slash best friend, who is insanely jealous of her powers and is trying to get her own powers. So, it also they do a really nice job on Netflix of acknowledging the further Marvel Cinematic Universe without ever like specifically going into a lot of details. So, you know, this show feels more like the everyday things that are happening in the Marvel Universe that nobody is talking about. So, you know, just this like kind of the street level hero stuff. So, this season sees a lot of change for different characters. Like she has she eventually makes him an associate investigator, but he's this ex-junkie that lives down the hall that keeps annoying the crap out of her. And she eventually just kind of gives in and lets him work for her. So from there, she ends up, you know, pushing him away like she always does to everybody else, and he ends up going off and starting to do his own thing as well by the end of the season. So it's really quite a good show, and I gotta tell you, if you got access to Netflix, definitely give, you know, I've already told you Daredevil, The Defenders, Luke Cage, Iron Fist sucks, don't bother with it. But Jessica Jones really is quite good. Really is.
No. What are her superpowers, you said?
She's strong.
Yeah.
She heals pretty fast. She doesn't have the impenetrable skin like Luke Cage does, but I think she's kind of hard to damage, damage to. So, but she's a great character as far as, like, you know, seeing somebody who is messed up. I mean, she's got issues, and she's got issues, and she's got powers, and, you know, she's not your Superman Boy Scout character.
See, I've never heard that. I've always heard the name Jessica Jones, and for some reason, that's a name that sounds like you should know what it is, and I've just heard it over and over.
Yeah.
Why did she stop using a superhero name?
In the books, I can't tell you. I know in this, it seems like she never did have, like, the superhero thing going on.
Oh.
In the TV series, I don't think she was ever... she was ever actually, like, a superhero costumed, you know, Avenger type character. So, she, from what I see in the Netflix show, she was just always, you know, she grew up with these powers with her adopted family, and, oh, you better look out. Dog's gonna knock over comics.
That's okay.
All right. So she just kind of grew up with this stuff, dealing with it. So, you know, it's actually quite nice to see that not everybody ends up in a costume in this new Marvel universe.
Well, it makes sense.
You know?
I watched, a long time ago, I was visiting my daughter, and I watched the first episode of Daredevil. Yeah, I really like Daredevil. I especially like the Miller stuff. But, I watched this. Well, this is good. If I had access to Netflix, I'd watch it. Well, now that I do, I think I watched another part of an episode, but I don't know. I just, at the time, wasn't interested.
Yeah.
A guy I used to train with kept bringing up Iron Fist. And I like the character, you know. I like the comics.
The character in the comic books is one thing. The shoddy acting and as a martial artist, you will cringe watching this show.
I watched it. I watched, I don't know how many episodes I watched, but my daughter, she found, you're watching that? Have you seen it? He goes, no, but she was talking about a little bit she's heard of it. Well, it was kind of neat how he showed up,
mm-hmm.
and how his father's partner, you know, had two kids,
yeah,
and how he was out of it. One thing, I read the comic as a kid, but they had the Iron Fist in the regular Marvel comics. They also had the black and white magazine of the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu.
Yep,
and every once in a while, I'd pick one of those up and have a black and white story, and I'd always get myself confused. I didn't... In one, there's a superhero guy that knows martial arts with this atomic fist, you know. But then I'd pick up where it was almost like that movie The Lost Horizon where they're finding Shangri-La.
Yeah.
And and how his father was killed. I'd get confused. I wasn't really sure what was going on. So when I watched the show, I don't know how much was in the comics, but that was an interesting part about how, you know, he was basically homeless. And as far as the writing of the show, it's kind of wonky because immediately they hate him. The daughter is completely against him. Next thing you know, the daughter's in love with him.
Yeah.
And then kind of find out they all trust him. Their father is excised from the company. The brother and sister are good friends of this guy. And how in the world did he beat everybody to get to Iron Fist when he acts like a 2-year-old children act better than this guy?
I know.
And I'm thinking...
I mean, he's literally defeated by every run-of-the-mill, you know, street martial artist that, you know, spent 5 seconds in a dojo.
Yes.
But yet you earned this great title of the Iron Fist amongst these highly trained individuals. Give me a break.
He has absolutely no balance in his personal life, his emotions, or anything else. That's why he gets defeated. I'm thinking, I don't know. This isn't working. I don't know how many episodes I watched. Nevertheless, I did watch some, but then I found it still enough's enough. I haven't...
Yeah. And to hear him talk about martial arts, it's like, okay, here's a guy that like got a book on martial arts, skimmed it, or read the Cliff Notes, and is considering himself a guru.
Yeah.
Daredevil is the fight choreography in Daredevil is so superior to it. I mean, he's using quick inside, you know, elbows, knees. I mean, he's got a different, very brutal fighting style.
Right.
You know, a very street martial arts fighting style, and almost like Krav Maga.
Yeah.
With Iron Fist, it's, I don't know, it's like, I found this VHS of Kung Fu from some dude in the 80s, and now I know martial arts.
That's absolutely it. Now, there were some neat, I like the girl that is basically training street kids to straighten out their life.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things to the show that I thought were neat, and that's what caught my interest. And again, I liked the fact that he was homeless and everything was, you know, no hope in a way, and he kept going. But I don't know. The writing's way too wonky, and
yeah,
it's just. Well, we already went over all the things I don't watch anymore. But I did watch a few episodes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, probably more than a few. I'll have to check out Jessica Jones, and Daredevil. I thought was good. But I don't know why. It can be good, but it's not what you want to watch at the time. Yeah. You know?
And of course, Luke Cage. Luke Cage is just fantastic.
No, I haven't watched that one yet.
I can't think of the name of the actor playing Luke Cage, but he is freaking brilliant. I mean, just a freaking brilliant, brilliant job. I love everything about Luke Cage. And not to mention, like, in the Luke Cage series, they actually give, like, a tip of the head. They actually show that original yellow blouse.
Yeah, with a tiara.
The tiara and yellow blouse outfit. They actually show that at one point, and you're like, oh my god, I can't believe they actually did that.
You know, saying that, if you lived in the early 70s, as I did, comic books were all bigger than life, but you know, that one, that even though that was a costume, it didn't really seem like a costume. It seemed like a street-level kind of guy for a Marvel comic. You gotta understand, everybody in Marvel Comics, even the regular people, were all idealized forms. You know, they weren't like regular people. And unless they were trying to draw some skinny kid, and all of a sudden he was the skinniest twerp you ever saw in your life, it was defied logic. But the Luke Cage costume, to me, wasn't really so much a superhero costume as a blaxploitation type character at the time.
Yeah.
You know, but now you look back and, yeah, that is kind of silly. But at the time, if you're printed on newsprint and you have a yellow shirt, well, it's good. You show up.
Yeah.
That's why in that first X-Men movie, Dave Cockrum always hated Wolverine. And they put him in the X-Men. And he said at one point he designed a new costume for Wolverine. And so everybody in the bullpen liked it because it looked like a Wolverine. But Marvel would never approve it. And he saw the first X-Men movie, and he said his favorite line was when Wolverine said something about they're all wearing black leather, and Cyclops said, "What do you want, yellow spandex?"
Mm-hmm.
Which was funny. But Dave Cockrum, "I love that part." Well, yeah, but if you're printed on newsprint and you got a bunch of characters in black leather, the comic's not going to sell well. It's just going to be a muddy, mundane mess,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
So you need yellow spandex and yellow blouses with a steel tiara.
Big old metal tiara.
Yeah, Luke Cage.
Yeah.
It was a good character, though, except when he said, "Sweet Christmas."
Oh, and he says it in the show.
Does he
too.
Do it? They do that?
Oh, yeah, he totally says
okay,
Sweet
now
Christmas.
That makes me happy. I don't know why. When I say that, in the 70s, you're thinking, nobody says Sweet Christmas, but...
But it was a way to get him to say something. You knew what he was saying without saying it.
Sweet Christmas. But, yeah, especially a black guy in the 70s saying Sweet Christmas. That's
it's the most ridiculous damn thing in the world.
That's like when he gets upset, fudge!
Yeah.
Consarnet. But no, actually, for some reason, to show him saying Sweet Christmas makes me kind of happy.
You know what? The first time he said it, I was like, yes, he said it. My wife's looking at me like, the hell does that even mean? Don't worry about it. It's funny.
Yeah, well, I've always wondered that. Anyway, well, that was Netflix Flixpalooza. Let's have a music break.
Yeah. You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Your Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
And that was Gray Market. They're a Tampa Bay area band. Has a new CD coming out. You got to listen to them. Have the Bandcamp page on the post. Anyway, I've got a book here that I'm going to try to get Rook to read, but I know he won't. And that is...
Usagi Yojimbo.
What you have read.
Well, I have, absolutely.
It's a really
Dallas
long...
and I grew up reading this.
Yeah, I love it. I first saw it, it appealed to me. And I pick up the issues, but what surprises me is how it just carries on. I mean, he continues to build the story. And if you read it from the trades from the beginning all the way to what he's doing now, it tells one long story of his life. It continues on. The characters reoccur. New characters come in all the time. The stories are strong. The artwork was good and has only gotten better. But what they're doing now is they're making each story arc its own series. So it's going to be now considered mini-series. This is called Usagi Yojimbo the Hidden.
7-issue series.
Yeah, it's a 7-issue series, but I think he said at one point they don't show it on the cover. But even though it's a 7-issue series, it's still a linear story. So it tells I think somewhere inside it tells the number. Anyway, this one starts out, which is something kind of interesting. He's with Detective Ishida, or Inspector Ishida, which is, again, a really strong reoccurring character as a police inspector. And he's in this one city that's walled, and there's these guys on horseback running, and they're trying to get into the city. They pull out a official, you know, pass to get in. Well, then there's other guys right behind them trying to get them, and they kill them in the street at night. And then they have to run away. Usagi and stops them. Well, they're carrying something. Well, somebody steals it before they get a hold of it, and they're trying to find out what it is. As the series goes on, it turns out it's a silver cross, which they don't know what that signifies. But the inspector explains it's from the European religions.
Right, and that was something that was very, very much done in Japan.
Now, my limited knowledge of it, there's a book, it's probably my favorite book. It's called The Teiko, or Teiko, I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, but a friend of mine had it, I ended up buying it. But it's written in the 60s, but it was about the three men that reunited Japan, back in the medieval times. Mm-hmm. And one of these men, the book starts out with a poem. And it says, how do you make the bird sing? And then it has Oda Nobunaga, and he says, kill it. And it says, the second man is Hideyoshi Toyotomi. And he says, make the bird want to sing. And then it goes to Tokugawa Ieyasu, and he says, wait. And it says, this story is about the man that made the bird want to sing. Well, Oda Nobunaga, the first one that said, kill it, was Toyotomi Aoshi's master. And basically, he was reunited Japan. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, he was 50 years old, and one of his generals killed him. And which, reading the book, I thought, why? I mean, he disgraced his general in front of everybody. But basically, his general was planning a dinner party. And Nobunaga says, don't do it anymore, you're not going to go, and they're humiliated. Well, I mean, not being Japanese, I didn't quite understand that. But then I've later read that they were lovers. So he was spurned. So there was an underlying thing that wasn't in the book I read. But anyway, Nobunaga was reuniting Japan, but it was a bloodbath going through everything. And they said that if he lived, he never really would have reunited Japan because people would remember the bloodbath and all the carnage. Nevertheless, in that book, they were talking about missionaries and about the Japanese people were surprised about these missionaries, because at one point they were delivering a cake to Nobunaga, and there was mud, and somehow the missionary slipped and dropped the cake and destroyed it, and they just got up, brushed herself off, and went back home. And the people were shocked because they were expecting to get beaten and somebody beheaded for this humiliation by these missionaries, losing the cake they were going to give the Lord, whereas they didn't think it was that important.
Yeah.
Now, saying that, there's a lot of horrifying stories about, you know, European missionaries coming in and destroying people's whole culture and smallpox blankets and everything else, but there was good things. Well, Oda Nobunaga had crosses. You know, he basically said he was a Christian. And one funny thing in the book, he had a black slave from Africa, and everywhere he went, he brought that slave with him. And he was proud of it. And, you know, I guess nobody had seen a black man at the time. And at one point, the missionaries asked him, he says, "Why are you so good to him?" And he looked straight at him and says, "Well, I'm good to you as well." And basically, they were asking, like, "Why are you taking this lower man and treating him so well?" And basically, he looked at him like putting them all in the same place. I always thought that was funny.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But anyway, when Nobunaga was gone, they started having trouble with the Christians. You know, I mean, they started realizing that it was basically another kingdom unto theirs, you know, and the missionaries had a bit of control. And it was Tokugawa Ieyasu that outlawed it. I think Hideyoshi did up to a point, but it got bloody. And those comic books I love that I rave about, Lone Wolf and Cub, one of the stories, it shows that.
Yeah.
And basically what they're doing, I can't stress the bloodiness of this, but they had basically a little relief sculpture of Mary and Jesus, you know, the Madonna holding the baby, and they put it down, and then have the people step on it.
Yep.
And some people, the cub and Lone Wolf and Cub, he stepped on it, like, okay, and they said, "Well, what's this boy doing here?" But a lot of people couldn't step on it, and they dropped to their knees and kissed it and says, "Please forgive me, Blessed Virgin." Well, they were taken away and crucified, mm-hmm. You know. But they were brutal getting Christianity out of Japan. And yeah. After that, I started reading all kinds of stories. Well, this one's starting. I don't think this is building up to that point, but I've only read 3 issues, and they're trying to find out where this package was, and they just found out it was a cross. And that's something that really interests me, is Christianity in Japan.
Yeah.
Although this one isn't as bloody as Lone Wolf and Cub was.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to see see them tackling that subject matter and something that, I mean, that I've always considered as fun as Yasagi. So,
it, you know, it's one thing. Yasagi Jimbo, to me, is an all-ages book.
Yeah.
I mean, kids can read it. I was listening to, I think it was Dennis Kitchen, you know, the underground publisher. But they had his daughter. This is an old episode of something. But his daughter came on, and a young lady, and she read Yasagi Jimbo. And she said, "It's great."
Yeah.
It's great, but I'll tell you, I really like the character Yasagi, but they talk about a lot of things, like when he left the village, they were going to, him and a friend, his best friend, were going to a sword school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then Yasagi saw this old man, and for some reason decided to stay with him, and that became his sword instructor, where his best friend went on to that prominent school. But they bring up a lot of things like that, like Yasagi actually made the better choice. They talk all about Japanese politics, but they bring up a lot of things. They bring up the peasants, they bring up the lords, they bring up how, you know, in the stories, he has mythological stories, he has real stories, adventure stories, and sometimes...
He even ran into Godzilla at one point.
Yeah. And they did have a mini-series outside the regular series called Senso, which is basically War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
The War of the Worlds, things coming down and fighting, but that turned out to be kind of an imaginary story.
Yeah.
But and my favorite is I have on my rating list is Grass Cutter. That's far beyond the best of Yasagi Jimbo. But he's not afraid to pick up, you know, what I'd call uncomfortable subjects sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's always tastefully done. Like I said, it's an all-ages thing. You won't be a kid reading a Marvel black and white book about the Punisher and getting sick, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, The Hidden, it's three issues. Things are happening, but nothing really to talk about except we just realize it's a Christian cross, and I'm wanting to find out more about it and how he handles the rest of it.
Yeah.
So
should be interesting to see where they go with that.
Yep. So, your turn.
My turn. You're killing me because I haven't been reading crap. Been getting ready for an all-new D&D campaign, though.
Are you really?
Yep. Yep. Well, I shouldn't say an all-new one. I'm actually I'm going to be introducing some young players to D&D. Some kids that have never played before. I've had some parents, some old friends of mine, tell me that their kid was interested in learning how it all works and everything. So I talked to the kid, and he's setting up with one of his friends, and we're gonna introduce him to the game. So we're gonna run the same storyline that I'm already running with my players that are already meeting here on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be interesting because I remember, I know you didn't do any role playing.
Not really. I met some guys in high school.
Yeah.
And I went in and played a couple of different dungeons once or twice.
Yeah.
What I liked was painting the figures. And
yeah.
I'd hang out with the guys that paint the figures, but I never really cared for the game. Oh, yeah. When I was in college, I met a guy that was always trying to get me to come play. And I said, it's just meticulous. So I do fun dungeons. And that was an understatement. He really did. He did interesting dungeons, and they were fun. And so I played, I liked him and his friends, so I'd hang out with him a little bit, but I didn't really play much.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I just remember back in the day when I was first learning how to play, the rules seemed so convoluted and ridiculous.
Yeah.
You had to roll in order to hit something, but you needed the negative to meet the positive, and it was just a whole bunch of ridiculous. This new rule set, fifth edition, is so much easier to work with. It basically runs on sets of 20 for everything. I mean, you roll, and if somebody's armor class is 18 and you roll 19, boom, you hit them. It's so much easier that way rather than, okay, well, you roll a 17 and his armor class is this, but because of this bonus and this bonus, but you have this bonus minus this plus that divided by this. Back in the day, it was advanced mathematics. Now it's so much easier.
Hmm.
You roll, you have plus 1, 2, 3. He rolls, or he has plus 1 or 2, whatever it is. It's so much easier nowadays. I think it's going to be great for these younger kids to start learning how it all works.
Seeing that, when I was in college, my room was nothing but Roger Dean posters and Frazetta posters, And some guys would come over and ask me if I like Dungeons and Dragons. Well, no, not really. And but they'd bring their games. There's a couple of guys in the dorm that would play, and they would talk about the concepts of the game. But this guy would come over. He was a mathematics major, and he would come. A nice guy, and very when he spoke, it was soft and measured all the time, but a couple of Dungeons & Dragons guys would come over room and hang out, and he'd come over and bring his paperwork and his game and what he's planning. And these other guys who were heavily into Dungeons & Dragons would just get sick of their stomach, because he had it like you rolled the dice to see how fast you could put your hand on the hilt, and then another roll to see how fast you could pull it out of the scabbard.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's what I say, and that's what these other Dungeons & Dragons guys say, but the guy, he was a mathematics major. To him, that's what he liked. And one of the guys said, well, that's too slow moving and too meticulous. And the guy's like, well, I like to think that my games are fun and fast moving. Well, to him, he had a different mind than everybody else.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I'm there with goo going, hey, it's fun, But
yeah, but that's the glory of D&D, is that every single game is not going to be the same. Every player is not going to be the same. You're not going to find you're not going to find two dungeon masters or game masters that run everything the same way. And the rules are nothing more than guidelines. I mean, you can break the rules for any reason you want. I mean, just for an example, one of the evil things I've done to my my players currently is I have a paladin in our group. Well, there's this otherworldly plague that's spreading through the world. So the paladin, using healing magic drawn from the gods, tries to heal somebody.
Yeah.
Well, the gods have deemed that this otherworldly plague is so horrible that the person's better off dead. So he goes to heal him, and he ends up killing him instead.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that you can break the rules, and you can change things like that. So now the paladin has to figure out how he fits and what his relevance is to everything. So, you know, two of his compatriots right now have the plague, and he almost healed one from battle the other night.
Oh.
They were in battle, and they got done fighting, and he goes, "Oh, I'm going to use this on him." And I smiled and went, "You're going to do what?" And he goes, nope, never mind, I'm not doing that.
Rook's the only dungeon master that gives all of his players identity crisis. Wow.
You know,
that's pretty interesting, though, actually.
It's, you know, it's fun to do stuff, you know, like this. And, you know, I've created a whole little story inside, well, story inside the story, you know, for the players to work through. And I can't wait to run a second group of people through the same storyline and see what they do differently.
Hmm.
So I'm sure that they won't stab somebody in the throat within the first 5 minutes of the game like the other group had. Literally, I've got a guy standing there that is about to give them all kinds of information, and the one guy stabs him in the throat and kills him. So, yeah, you never know what your players are going to end up doing.
Wow. Yeah, when I first saw the game, what fascinated me, one guy was explaining to me that the idea is you have a character and you basically live that character's life, you know, and all the way up to the end. I thought, well, that is kind of interesting. But I never really saw that actually play out. It seemed like guys were always going to different dungeons and they had a handful of characters they were always using, and, you know, again, it was just too meticulous for me.
Yeah, some guys get over the top with things. You know, everything needs to be rolled and reasoned, and, you know, there's guys that will actually be like, well, you know, I'm going to roll an intelligence check to see if I'm smart enough to open the book, the right book, that will tell me how to get past this dungeon. It's like,
see, that's the game. I told you that mathematics picture was coming up.
And some people play it that way. Some people absolutely play it that way.
And that's what
they
like.
Other people are like, I'm going to go check out all the books on the bookshelf.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You know, roll a perception check or roll an investigation check to see if you find, you know, see what you find. They roll high enough, they find the right book. You know, no, I'm going to roll an intelligence check to see if I can find the right book. Okay, well, that intelligence check didn't work. You know, it's all about the words you use, too. You know? We got dogs at gates begging.
Yeah. Dogs at gates. Like life. All right, well, I am. Last time I was at Yancey, I saw another young animal book that I wasn't aware of that I bought. Eternity Girl. I'm really enjoying the young animal books. It's funny because I'm not a young animal, but...
Didn't we talk about Eternity Girl already?
No, because I just got it the last time I was there. We talked about Shade the Changing Girl.
Oh, okay.
Which they brought back. The series ended after 12 really nice issues, and they... Now it's called Shade the Changing Woman. And it's a continuation of it, which I'm kind of getting scared because one character's come back and... That's kind of terrifying. But my daughter, she has a comic pull list, and she went and picked them up, and she saw Shade the Changing Woman and bought one. And she said she liked the art, which is why I read it. But she said, I'm not really familiar with this character. I'm kind of lost. And I said, well, I got the issues if you want to read them. Eternity Girl. When I was a kid, I used to pick up DC reprint books, and they had a character called Kid Eternity, which is a Golden Age character. And I don't know if that was originally a DC book. I think it was from another company that DC bought. But basically, it was a kid. He had a white turtleneck shirt, gray pants, and a red sash tied around his waist. And he had this spirit. It was a fat, bald guy called the Keeper that was with him, but he was a ghost. And but Kid Eternity had powers. I don't know if he almost died or did die and came back, but he had powers. He could call anybody from the past or mythological mythological creatures. And I liked the stories. I didn't like all of them. Sometimes I'd get one reprint and I said, oh, Kid Eternity, I like him. And some of the stories were just so boring and stoic, but some of them were pretty good. And like I said, he'd, you know, be taking care of something and all of a sudden he had to call back you know, Benedict Arnold or George Washington or Robin Hood, you know, but he'd always call these characters out. Again, I liked them. I don't know if they've ever done anything else with Kid Eternity, but this is Eternity Girl, and I don't know if they're tying this in with Kid Eternity, because it has nothing to do with Kid Eternity. It's
might just be interesting coincidences and names.
Yeah, well, they're basing these things off DC properties, so. But this is basically a woman or young lady that works for a government agency. Okay, yeah, we're back. Sorry, something came up we had to take care of. Anyway, Eternity Girl. This book starts out with a government-type agent, and something happened to her, and she's been permanently modified. She's got, like, bird feet. It's kind of like Metamorpho. Every part of her body is a different texture and a different type of tentacle.
Her feet and right hand seem to be the same.
Yeah. It's interesting, but yeah. Basically the agency is paying her, but she's just staying home. And she has a friend that's coming over checking on her, but, you know, she feels unproductive. She feels like not part of society and, you know, again, her appearance. And I guess she's developed some kind of powers. I'm trying to explain this book that I like but don't quite understand. At one point, they had a page, it's a white background, and they got these characters floating in a circle talking to each other. One of them is Mordru, which is an evil wizard that fought the Legion of Superheroes. And every time I've read him, he's always the bad guy that, you know, 23 teenage superpower guys are trying to stop to save the universe. But in this one, they're doing some type of metaphysical, philosophical conversation with some other characters that I'm not really aware of what they are. I've never read them before. I'm loving it.
Yep.
So, anyway, three issues are out. DC Young Animal, Eternity Girl. I have no idea what's going on, but I'm hoping by the time the 12th issue comes up, I will. But it's a fun ride.
I love the art style on this book.
Yeah, I do too.
It's so wild. Such a wild art style.
I like the covers, too.
Yeah, the covers. This one especially.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, they're, like I said, they're fun. Doom Patrol, Dallas and I were both reading. I like that one quite a bit. But I see Shade the Changing Girl, and I thought that looked kind of neat. I saw it at the store. I picked one issue up. And that turned into my favorite comic. And like I said, 12 issues it ended. But they brought it back, and it's still good. It's unique.
Yeah.
And Cave Carson. The old one was Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye. Again, 12 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Cave Carson was an old book that I never read. It was on I don't know what comic book it was that DC had, but it was like My Greatest Adventure or something, or Brave and the Bold, I think. But I think Gerard Way found out that Cave Carson did have a cybernetic eye in those old stories, but they never, you know, of course, they never really said anything about it. He just had a robot eye.
Yeah.
But he thought, well, that's interesting. So they built a whole series off of it. I didn't know all this stuff, that his wife was... They have a daughter, but his wife was part of the people that lived underneath the ground. It's like a tribal thing. And she was their queen. Our princess.
What? Really?
Now, when they, in the comic, Michael Avon Oeming from Powers fame, he draws it. And he draws them as... Not, I mean, they're human, humanoid creatures, but he makes them a little more alien, you know. And they're tribal, it's neat. And, anyway, that series finished. And now it's, Cave Carson has an interstellar eye. That series started, and it's pretty interesting, but he's met, another version of himself. And, I don't know, again, it's just a few issues I read into it, so I'm not quite sure. It's a fun comic, but it's kind of out there. So, I can't think of the other books. Anyway, we've rambled about everything in the planet. So, you got anything else?
I'm good.
Okay. All right, comic books and comic book accessories. All right, well, I guess this is going to do for now. We've talked quite a bit. If you have any questions or anything you'd like to recommend, feel free to contact us through the contact page. If you can get through the really scary, deceptive site that comes up every time you go to our page.
Of course, you can also just find us on Facebook.
Yep. And iTunes. If you type in two-dimension comic book podcast, we show up. But if you just type in comic book, you're not going to find us anymore.
And remember, write some reviews on iTunes for us, and I swear to God, I will read them right here on the show for you.
There you go. Even bad ones. We'll take bad ones. Okay, that's all we got. Hopefully we'll get the other guys back on an episode someday. And in the meantime,
read more comics.